Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is a Design for Living Big Book meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Dean and I am a compulsive overeater and your chairperson for today. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. We start this meeting by remembering our common purpose to extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer. Let us be mindful of OA's unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences yet unites us in the solution to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Today, we are delighted to have Roy L. with us to share his experience, strength, and hope focused on step 3, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Please note this meeting is being recorded. I would like to welcome Roy to the group. Good evening, Roy, as you're coming from America.
Good evening. It's what time is it here now? It's 12:38 in the afternoon here. I'm a compulsive overeater and a miracle of mental health. My name is Roy, and I am abstinent today by the grace of God. Any success I have in my life is more his than mine. And I want to thank Joe and Dean for inviting me to share on step 3 today. I'm what the book calls a real compulsive overeater. And I at some point in my eating career, I always like that line in the book, at some point in my eating career, I lost the power of choice over food. And that point was when I was about 7 years old, because I was a fat kid since the age of 7. And I'm going to try and briefly qualify just to win your confidence, as the book says. Although I want to focus on step 3, of course. But I came from a family of compulsive overeaters. My father, they told him, you know, you got adult onset diabetes, and as long as you just stopped eating sugar and ate healthy, regulated your carbs and sugars, you can take these Oura-based tablets. It'll be like a one-a-day vitamin. It'll be no problem, no real change in your lifestyle. And my mother would find half-eaten boxes of chocolates under his bed, and sure enough, he wound up out of control, having to shoot insulin, you know. And my mother was always on diets. My brother's been up. He claims it was only 260, but I've seen videos of him, man. I mean, that's my family. The family disease is compulsive overeating. I also became alcoholic. I like to say I was fat from the age of 7, drunk from the age of 16, and my family could never get the booze stuff because they're not alcoholics. They're foodaholics like us in this meeting. And the only thing I want to say about my drinking, because I don't, you know, don't mix programs. I obey the suggestions of the fifth tradition, singleness of purpose. But I'll just say that I tried to be a vegetarian at one point and live on vodka and mashed potatoes. And that food plan did not work. I gained 30 pounds on that food plan. So alcoholism is a pain in the ass when you're also a compulsive overeater, which was my first substance abuse. Food's kind of a kid's drug. And that's what and then alcohol came in later and became, you know, so alcohol drove me into sobriety. You know, I'm a real alcoholic too. Head on collision in a blackout, you know, suspended my license. So I got sober in 1978, and the geniuses in AA said, well, you know, just if you feel like taking a drink, have a piece of chocolate. Yeah, these guys are brilliant, right? That it's actually in the book, so I don't hesitate to mention it, but that does not work. If food was your original substance abuse issue from the age of 7. And so, you know, first month I was sober, I think I gained 30 pounds. 8 months into sobriety, I'm out of control on my knees saying, God, when I get back to Miami, I got sober in Miami and I was in Vermont trying to limit my binging to carob covered power bars from the health food store. But you know, you eat 10 a day. I mean, you're not, I was on my knees saying, God, when I get back to Florida, let me get to this OA I've been hearing about, you know. And they used to say, you think coming on one 12-step program is a bridge back to life, and you find out it's really a tunnel to another 12-step program. And that's my experience. So with 8 months sobriety, I'm coming into my first OA meeting, and there's these women, kind of these matronly condo commandos from North Miami Beach. And I was 31, still, I'm an exercise bulimic too. Yeah, it's part of my story. Still running, you know, 4 or 6 miles a day and everything. And who are these women with my big book? And then this woman comes up to me and she sees me saying the serenity prayer. I identified as this is a newcomer. This is my first meeting. And she says, well, I saw you saying a serenity prayer. Where do you? I said, well, I'm in AA. And she goes, boy, your higher power must love you because he gave you 2 diseases. You know, and I'm like, holy shit. You know, it was bad enough getting sober. Now I got to deal with this. But she says something that gains my confidence. And that's why I am going to briefly qualify, hopefully briefly. And that's, my name is Edie, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've lost 90 pounds and kept it off for 5 years. Now that gets my attention, doesn't it? And she became my sponsor for my first meeting. Of course, the higher power was Gracie back in Miami. I'm not saying it was like that in LA, because that's where the program started, and that's where I live now in Santa Monica. And my first food sponsor here in LA was Roseanne S., who started our fellowship. She was my first food sponsor. I've been in LA now about 20 something years. But anyway, let me just get this qualification out of the line. And so let's talk about recovery in the book. My top weight was 280 something, might've been a little higher. I stopped weighing. Like I said, I was fat since the age of 7. I've gained and lost 80 pounds at least 3 times and lesser amounts of weight. You know, I'll give you the chronological order. Amphetamines, and started my compulsive exercising, running up and down a duplex apartment that my family had, like a rat in a maze. It was nuts. I mean, you know, running up and down an apartment stairs, you know. I lost 80 pounds on amphetamines, gained it back. Second major diet, I was in college by this time, Stillman diet. I don't know if you remember that one. It was like all protein and flush yourself with water. Lost 80 pounds. And then with the exercise bulimia, it went absolutely batshit. I mean, I was literally running 12 miles a day, Miami heat, 90 degree, high noon, 90 degree temperature, 90 degree humidity. There were maybe 3 people in Miami running. One of them was a gym teacher and the other one, I forget. I mean, it's nuts, you know, it's insane. It wasn't even a scenic run. It was like around this practice football soccer pitch, you know, what the British call, or the Aussies call football, soccer, we call it. It was like, you know, just running in a circle, 12 miles at 90 degree temperature, high noon in Miami. And next, gained it all back. Next diet was the pregnant hormone shots, HCG. I'll never forget that one. Human chorionic gonadotropin, administered by this cunning, smiling, little thin osteopath. He had 2 clinics going, one in Jersey, one in Pennsylvania. And there was mostly women and a few fat guys lined up for $25. He weighs you, gives you this 500 calorie a day Auschwitz diet, gives you this placebo. Every time you, twice a week, you go get your shot for $5. And I joined the gym. Now we're up north. So I go from running 12 miles a day in Miami in high noon, you know, to running behind a snowplow in New Jersey with a ski mask on and, you know, snowflakes coming down like a blizzard. Guys are coming out in their porch going, hey, Rocky, hey, they thought I must've been training for some sort of Olympic event or something, you know? And I lost 80 pounds on the HCG. You're gonna lose weight on an Auschwitz diet, you know, whether the shot as a placebo or not. The last one, the serious, last serious one, there are others, you know, was a liquid protein. And I remember washing it down with diet orange soda and stuff like that. And, you know, I lost 30 pounds in a month. You know, I had no blood sugar. I was supposed to take a tennis lesson. I was back in Florida by this time. I can't stand cold weather, still can't. And I couldn't even lift a tennis racket, so I canceled it. I canceled the tennis lesson. But the point is, I'm a real compulsive overeater. You know, I'm going to go to the gates of insanity and death with this delusion that someday, somehow, I'm going to eat and control my eating like normal people. And I don't know what I was thinking. It's definitely a form of mental illness and insanity, because when I'm running that, you know, behind a snowplow or high noon in Miami, I'm thinking, all right, this time it'll be different. I'll lose the weight. Maybe I won't want to eat. Maybe I'll find a magic diet. Maybe I'll be able to keep exercising it off. You know, it's all a crazy delusion. And that's why the book does not hesitate to use the I word. It's a form of insanity. The book says this. This is not my opinion. It says we're not talking about whoopee eaters. We're talking about compulsive overeaters, sick people, deranged men. Deranged. We're nuts when it comes to food. We might be very successful in career. We might be a doctor or a lawyer, or an Indian chief or whatever, you know. We might have a lot of money. We might have degrees. We might be highly educated. But when it comes to food, it says, I am insane. Okay. And this disease is progressive and never gets better. It never got better for me, I'll tell you that. And my experience, and so I joined OA back in 1978, and when the higher power was Gray Sheet, and there was nobody working the steps out of the big book. And I'm not picking on OA. I think it was just as bad in AA, frankly, back in 78. In the 70s, there was a couple of guys named Joe and Charlie who were basically doing a tour around AA, including Australia. I know they made it over here. Teaching AA its own program because it had been so diluted, and it was fellowship-based recovery and meeting-based recovery. And when you went to a step study, it was all out of the 12 and 12. I'm not a book thumper that bashes the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 is brilliant when used properly. It's meant to broaden and deepen my understanding of the basic text, but it was never meant to supplant, replace, or, you know, the basic text. And literally, Joe and Charlie were going around the country and then later to Australia and Canada and whatever, teaching AA its own programming. But trust me, back in 78 Miami, the higher power was something called Gray Sheet. If you want to read the history of OA, there's a book that Roseanne wrote. It was a favorite book that she ever wrote. It was called Beyond Our Wildest Dreams. It's a history of OA. It's conference approved OA literature. So I highly recommend it. Anyway, I come into OA. And I'm heading off to France with 8 months sobriety and 2 weeks of abstinence, you know. And my sponsor, Edie, God bless Edie. She, you know, flexibility was not one of her strong suits. If I wanted to put milk in my coffee, she would not let me put milk in my coffee. If I wanted to change a pear instead of an apple, she would not let me do it. I had to call in before I made it. Their higher power is Gray Sheet. And she was just passing on to me what was given to her. She didn't, you know, you cannot transmit what you do not have. If you don't have knowledge of steps out of the big book, you shouldn't be volunteering to sponsor people out of the big book. You can do what you want. I'm not telling anybody else what to do, but you cannot, that's in the book. You can't transmit what you haven't got. So, but Edie lost 90 pounds and kept it off for 5 years. She knew how to adhere to Gray Sheet. I'll give her that credit. Gray Sheet was not appropriate for me. Once, I mean, I was still a young guy, still running 3-4 miles a day and working out. And these people, I won't call them old because I'm older than they are now, but they were. But, you know, she said, you better brown bag it. You're going to Europe. And I didn't. I'm too cool to be brown bagging, you know. And sure enough, I checked in, I asked for the diabetic meal when I bought the ticket, everything's cool. I checked in with the baggage. Yes, Mr. L, we have your diabetic meal. Yes. When I, finally we're up in the air now, I have, first of all, I'm starving. I've been on gray sheet for 2 weeks and I'm basically starving because it's really not enough given my energy level, my age, and the fact that I'm a man and they were women. And I was a young, feisty, young exerciser. And so I'm starving for 2 weeks anyway, and I haven't eaten breakfast since 6 in the morning. Now it's, by the time they're passing out the lunches on the plane, it's about 2 in the afternoon. So I'm starving. I'm starving because I haven't had enough food for 2 weeks. I'm starving because I haven't had breakfast for 6 months. And I'm starving because I'm a compulsive overeater and I crave food as a solution to my emotional problems. And sure enough, they forgot to pack the diabetic meal. So they put something in front of me I hadn't seen for a couple of weeks, like bread. And nothing really horrible, but I just ate because I was starving. There was nothing else. And then there was that cupcake, which I knew was a no-no for me. Sugar was one of my binge foods. And I took that first compulsive bite on the plane to Paris. And I looked at my neighbor's tray and she didn't finish her cupcake. I said, do you mind if I have your cupcake? And she says, no. And they say you hit the ground running. I hit the ground in Paris, France, eating with 8 months of recovery. About 2 weeks in OA and 8 months in A. And I went to the meetings in Paris, France at the time, 1978, the OA meetings in France were the shakiest, flakiest OA meetings ever, lived. I mean, the overeaters like me were binging, the anorexics were starving, the bulimics were puking, and nobody had any recovery. And I'm sitting there with 8 months of sobriety quoting the AA literature. Meanwhile, I can't stop eating French Mounds bars. So I go all the way to Paris, and what am I binging on? Bread, cheese, and chocolate. Now, it was good bread, good cheese, and good chocolate. I mean, I'll give the French some credit, but nothing I could have gotten back in Florida, French Mounds bars. They used to call them bounty bars. That was my nemesis. Anyway, I'm going to hit bottom here and pull out of this food log. I hit bottom in Marseille. I'm looking at about my fifth Mounds bar. I got sugared up to the eyeballs. I'm stoned on sugar, and the moment of truth. Now, remember, I had 2 weeks of abstinence back in Florida. I knew it was possible. And the people in the Paris OA group, once a few of them had been abstinent. Bob R. was 11 years sober. He's bulimic. He's throwing up 11 times a day. The anorexics, the daughter of two psychiatrists, MDs who can't figure out how they spawn this nutcase as a daughter. She's starving herself. Nobody's abstinent. But I had, what it was, and I did, and I tell this to my sponsees who are having trouble. I prayed every day, God, stop this. The pants are getting tighter. I know what's coming. It's going to, could be 300 pounds next stop, because I went 280 was my previous high. The more I prayed, the more I ate. And I can only explain it as like the pain of the present and the fear of the future, which is abstinence, because the only reminiscences I had of abstinence was gray sheet, and that was a very unpleasant deprivation. That had to get less painful than the pain of the present. In other words, binging had to get so bad that I was willing to take this leap into the future and just try and be abstinent. So I looked at my fifth French Mounds bar of the day, and I said, well, I've already had four or whatever the hell it was, and I didn't want to haggle with a kiosk lady to get my money back in French. My French is pretty good, by the way. I still speak French and Spanish. But I said, oh, well, I've already had five or whatever the hell it was, down the hatch. Like Bill said, he's beating on the bar wondering how he got started again. But oh, well, I might as well get good and drunk now. But when I got up on that train, I took the Midnight Express from Marseille up to Paris. I just said, I want to be abstinent today. And I was totally in the now. I was not thinking of numbers on a scale, how much weight I wanted to weigh or how long I was going to be abstinent. I just wanted to be abstinent for breakfast. Just get through. So I ordered an abstinent breakfast. Put milk in the coffee. Edie, screw you, Edie. You're not here in France looking over my shoulder. Give myself a pear for dessert. Who cares? I ate an abstinent breakfast, but take away, enlever le pain, take away the bread, because that was a binge food for me. And no sugar, put some saccharin or whatever the hell it was in the coffee. I got through, pair for dessert or not. I got through breakfast abstinent. Oh my God, I'm abstinent. I was totally in the now. So I went to the noon A meeting, went out to the fellowship afterward, abstinent lunch. Enlever le pain, s'il vous plaît, take away the bread. But donnez-moi du salade au lieu de frites. Give me salad instead of the French fries. So I had some meat and some salad. Un grand crème, s'il vous plaît. You know, give me cream in the coffee. And give me whatever for dessert, a pear, a banana. Hey, I'm abstinent for lunch. And then I go trundling around. And I hit the Monday night meeting. It was on the right bank at the Rue Saint-Henri near the President's Palace, I think it was. And it was St. Michael's English Church, l'Église Saint-Michel in French. And I went into that meeting. I'd been abstinent for the first time in months. And I wanted to be the superstar VIP of that meeting. And they said, okay, is it, you know, it's an English speaking meeting. There were no French OA. The French would come in once in a while and try and get the English, but their English was like our high school French usually, you know, it's not. And I felt like we were sending them back out to die because there's no French speaking OA, but it was only a couple English speaking meetings. And I just, does anybody have anything they want to say tonight? You know, we read how it works, whatever. And I shot up my hand because I wanted to be the star of that meeting. And I said, I got something to tell you guys today. I'm abstinent today. And then Morissette, who changed her name to Natalie later, she was a French pioneer founder. She got the program in Atlanta and brought it back to Paris in English. She was French, but she said, I'm abstinent today. And then Bob R. says, I'm abstinent today. And the anorexia, the whole group gets abstinent on the same day. It's a group miracle. And as far as I'm concerned, the greatest spiritual event in France since Lourdes. And I can't be the superstar VIP of the meeting. And that started my journey in Overeaters Anonymous into a state of grace. And that's what I consider it. I stepped into a state of grace. And I'm here to announce to you, because I was willing to pursue what we call in this meeting, it's the name of this meeting, a design for a living that works even in rough going. I have been abstinent for over 42 years. And when I mean abstinent, I don't mean calling my sponsor every time I want to eat. I mean, I've been a free man. The problem has been removed. It has happened automatically without effort on my part. I'm not cocky. I'm not afraid. I'm not fighting it. The problem has been removed. The obsession has been lifted. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, God. I take no credit for it. I've been a free man for over 42 years. And you can know that I've been active in OA 42 years. I started the Light a Candle meeting in Los Angeles, which is where all this internet shit started. We started taping our speakers and putting them on the central office intergroup. Roseanne S. was our first speaker. And then all the other intergroups started copying that and changing, you know, borrowing each other's speakers and, you know, linking. I've been a free man, and I've been watching this shit for now for over 42 years. And I'm going to tell you why I've been a free man for 42 years is because I was just stupid enough not to try and invent the wheel. The answer to my food problem, as with all my problems, is in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, is adapted for this program, Overeaters Anonymous. There is no easier, softer way. I've been watching this shit now for over 42 years. I've been watching him come in, lose weight, go out, wondering why they're not getting the 10-step promises, working all sorts of inventory formats, making the gray sheet the higher power. They don't have what I want. I'm just telling you the truth. What I want, and I'm taking no credit for it, is those promises in the book. And those promises have nothing to do with cash and prizes. They're all fourth dimensional promises, the world of the spirit. I'll comprehend the word serenity and know peace. I will intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle me. Self-seeking will slip away. I'll gain interest in my fellows. Fear of economic insecurity will leave me. I've actually technically got less money now than I had when I was 2 years on the program, but I have less fear. How does that happen? Because I got the promises. How do I get the promises? because I did the steps as outlined in the book, not as people who reinvented the wheel. Now, I read the OA literature. By the way, that For Today book is my favorite morning reader. I don't know who the hell wrote it or if a committee wrote it, but that is brilliant. I love it better than the AA Daily Reflections. I don't read the 24-hour book anymore, but I read some other spiritual literature, like Emmett Fox's Around the World. And I read spiritual literature in the morning, but I love my OA reader. And I read the OA 12 and 12 on step three before this speaking engagement. It's well-written, it's brilliant. And I read the AA 12 and 12, written by Bill Wilson and Tom Powers. And it's brilliant. It serves to broaden and deepen my understanding of the basic text. But the truth of the matter is, there ain't no substitute for the big book. It was the original presentation of how to deal with addiction. Of course, they were talking about ethyl alcohol addiction, and we're talking about food or sugar or bulimia or exercise bulimia or whatever our particular form of derangement is. But it's still the basic way to treat addiction. And it will treat compulsive gambling, and it will treat drug abuse. And I'm a 30-something year member of Al-Anon. It will treat the Al-Anon addiction, where I'm addicted to trying to fix people who don't want to be fixed, which is a pretty sick addiction. It can get me pretty sick. It treats all that stuff. And there is no substitute for the original process. So when I take my guys through the book, I just have them take some white out, cross out alcohol, put in food, cross out alcoholism, put in compulsive overeating or bulimia or whatever their trip is. And we're just going to do what the book says to do. And I have been associated now for quite some time with, I guess you call them book thumpers, but we're basically decided that we have not been able to improve the program. I mean, all the other literature is brilliant. It's helpful. It broadens and deepens my understanding. You know, the book says I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. If I read the 12 and 12, it says it's a fear of I'm going to lose what I have or I'm not going to get what I want. Brilliant. It broadens and deepens it. But if I've got no experience with the basic processes outlined in the book, I got nothing to broaden and deepen. And I've been watching this shit for a long time now. People who think they have improved on the basic process. Usually it's the G word. We're going to talk about that today because we're talking about step three. It's the G word that spooks a lot of people because the big book is pretty clear. No human power will remove my food addiction or my compulsive thinking around food. God could and would if he were sought. And that's where the problems lies. Before I can. What is that, 25 minutes?
25, yes.
Okay, good. Let me get into specifics on the steps. The steps are got numbers in front of them for a reason. First of all, I have to hit a bottom with step one. I have to be convinced that my human resources as marshaled by the will not solve my food addiction. And believe me, as much as I'm in love with my own voice, I am not the great persuader. And as much as I love the big book, the big book's not the great persuader. What does the book say is the great persuader? Food is the great persuader. Food kicked my ass in the OA 42 plus years ago. Okay? I wasn't looking for God. I wasn't looking for enlightenment. I wasn't looking for a vast fellowship and a support group. I could not stop eating. And then I get here and stay here for a while, and I realize that there's a dash in that first step, and my life is unmanageable. And I'm here to tell you that I had page 52 in my life so many times in this program. If you don't know what page 52 is and you're a newcomer, they call it the bedevilments, but a really good, shall we say, clinical description would be untreated addiction. I'm having problems with personal relationships, okay? I can't control my emotional nature. Maybe I'm having anxiety attacks or free-floating angst. I'm a prey to misery and depression. are you sure you want to go on Prozac? How do you know you're not just dealing with untreated addiction? I got nothing against doctors or psychiatrists or medication for outside issues. Are you sure? What are you dealing with, though? You might want to investigate that. Are you dealing with untreated addiction? We're full of fear. We couldn't make a living, or at least we're not enjoying whatever we're doing for money. Or maybe we're walking in to work every day. We're still making a salary, but we hate everybody, the boss, our fellow employees. We hate our job. You know, we couldn't seem to be of real use to other people. What's the use anyhow? That's the first step back to the food, right? What's the use of being abstinent anyhow? I'm miserable. I got page 52 in my life. And I'm telling you, people say, how long you been on the program? And I tell them, I've been on this program long enough to know what the right thing is to do and still do the wrong thing. And I've been on this program long enough to come up with solutions that are worse than the original problem. I don't manage my life well, stone cold abstinent and sober, okay? I am a compulsive overeater, a food addict, and also slash an alcoholic. I do not manage my life well. And that's part of the realization of step one. It says we learned we had to concede to our innermost self we were compulsive overeaters. The learning curve may be relapse for some of us. I know it has been for some of us. It may be stark raving abstinent. I'm miserable and suicidal and full of everything in page 52. Fear, feelings of uselessness, hating my job, hating my people around me, hating other people in OA, hating being on the planet. That has to happen sometimes. That's part of my learning curve. What's your learning curve? Maybe it's relapse. Maybe you've been away from OA for 10 years and gained 100 pounds, and now you're crawling back. Well, that's just part of the learning curve, folks. Okay? My learning curve was, you know, various points in my recovery. I've had page 52 of my life. I was really close to going out at 7 years. It was homicide, suicide. I had an ex-Al-Anon girlfriend recommending Prozac. I chose no on that. Or maybe pick up a drink or go back to the food or accept spiritual help. I was faced with a self-imposed crisis. You know, blot out my existence with a compulsive overeater's addiction or accept spiritual help. Not easy alternatives to face. So then I come in here and now it's step two. There's a power greater than myself. Is it going to restore me to sanity? Well, Bill gives a lot of arguments in chapter four, We Agnostics, which kind of deals with step two. He's basically asking us to open our minds that this power exists. And he gives you all these great arguments. And believe me, they're brilliant. You know, like he studied electrical engineering, so he talks about electrons and visual proof is not reliable. And we worship other things like the God of reason and money, property, and prestige. Certainly I did. But I'll tell you, that's not how Bill Wilson came to God. He came to God through in extremis, you know, laying in that hospital after Abby had visited him the second time and given him the program and saying, okay, I give up. I'll do anything if there is a God, let him show himself. And he had a white light experience, what we call photism. Read William James' Varieties of Religious Experience. That's what the psychologists call it. A white light, like Saul on the road to Damascus. Why are you persecuting me? Blinded by the light. And he changes from Saul to Paul, becomes a super Christian, okay? Well, Bill Wilson did not reason his way to God. And if you read that chapter four, you'll see that all the evidence he talks about is the witnesses of other people who are awakened spirits and have been restored to sanity. And all you have to do is go back to his own story. He's looking at Ebby going, this guy's roots grasped the new soil. There's something different about him. Never mind the musty past. There's a miracle sitting in front of me at my kitchen table. Had this power originated in him? Obviously, it had not. There was no more power in him in that moment than there was in me, and that was none at all. See, Ebby was Bill's old drinking buddy. Ebby was the guy who said, if I ever get that bad, I'm quitting, okay? And guess what? He got that bad and he couldn't quit. And now this asshole is sober with 2 months of sobriety and Bill can't get over it. That this guy is sober. Look at that story. You'll see curious, disappointed, amazed, aghast, shocked, interested, hopeless. All these emotions are going through Bill. And he, in, listen to his 1951 Dallas talk. It's a great talk. He goes over Ebby's visit and the original word of mouth program and later his famous white light experience in Towns Hospital. By the way, I'm a member of the AA History Lovers Group and have been for over 20 years, so I know all this stuff by heart. But he basically is saying there's something at work here in the human heart that is unbelievable. So it's always, I come into OA and there's Edie saying, I'm a compulsive overeater. I've lost 90 pounds. I've kept it off for 5 years. And a lot of times we used to show our pictures when we spoke. Pictures, you know, worth 1,000 words, you know. I had a food sponsor named Natalie who used to have this huge blow up picture. She was like 5 feet something and she weighed 300 pounds. And then she was a normal person on the podium and she'd bring this giant picture. One guy used to bring these pants that he used to get in from the podium, you know, they would use size 60 something waist and now he's a normal, you know. So we see the evidence of awakened spirit. Now, Ebby had 2 months of sobriety and Bill Wilson's calling it a miracle. That shows you what alcohol addiction was like back in 1930s. I mean, this shit goes back to the ancient Chinese. The earliest references to alcoholism. Nobody ever survived alcohol addiction before 1935. I'm sure food addiction was the same way, but they weren't talking about it as much in the big book back then. You know, they had drug addiction, they had food addiction, they had gambling addiction. And so the bottom line is nobody survived it. And he's calling 2 months of sobriety a miracle. So what am I with 42 years of abstinence? You know, used to weigh 280 pounds. I weighed in at the beginning of the month, 175, I think it was. I've been between 173 and 180 now for like 42 plus years, passing for normal. Okay. All right. So I come to believe there's some power here. And that's all, if you guys are freaking out about the G word, and I know some people, and the chapter 4 deals with this brilliantly. It says most of the time what we're really freaking out about is some idea of God that maybe somebody tried to throw on us in our childhood. Maybe I had a parents or a father who got drunk and beat me on Saturday night and dragged us all to church on Sunday morning, you know, make us look good. Obviously, I'm going to come in there with some baggage around the G word. And organized religion, maybe, okay? And it says, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. Now, I'm going to refer back to the doctor's opinion. He talks about they believe in themselves and even more in this power, which pulls chronic compulsive overeaters back from death. You know, Harlan G. at 700 pounds, cellulitis, the doctor's saying you're a dead man. You're not going to live more than a few months. And now he's normal. He's putting on book studies in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's a friend of mine. My brother lives in Scottsdale. Every time I go out to Scottsdale, Harlan asks me to speak for him. When he has questions about the big book, he calls me. Thank you, Harlan. I accept that as flattery. But, you know, we're walking miracles here, okay? And if you come in OA and listen to the speakers and read the literature with an open mind, how can you not come to believe there's power here? I want to read something from a book. This is a story in the back of the book here. Okay, page 386, paragraph number 3. It's called Me, an Alcoholic.
Roy.
That's 386, yeah, paragraph Roy, 3.
35 minutes, just to say.
Okay. Many times, all right, it says, here I found an ingredient that had been lacking in any other effort I had made to save myself. Here was power. Here was power to live to the end of any given day, power to have the courage to face the next day, power to have friends, power to help people, power to be sane, power to stay abstinent. That was, you know. So if you decide there's power in this program, then you're at step 3, okay? All you got to do is come in and listen and go to meetings with an open mind and listen to what we have to say. And then there's that decision. I need a piece of the serenity pie. I shouldn't use the pie analogy at an OA meeting maybe, but it's a decision. Do I need the power? Yeah. Am I going to go for the power? Yeah. Now, you don't have to have a clear conception of God. It can just be this power that's pulling chronic overeaters back from the gates of death. It's the power mentioned in the doctor's opinion, which allows these men to recreate their lives. Okay. And then you make a decision. I'm going to go for the power. And this decision, says the literature, will have no lasting effect unless followed up by action. Okay. If I decide that, well, I think I'm going to go down and take my car to the mechanic because I haven't had the oil change in 10,000 miles. And if I can decide that, but unless I actually take the key, go down to the car, start it, and go to the mechanic, that decision means nothing. I remember doing a third step with a guy right out of the book. This is an OA guy on his knees, holding hands, saying the prayer, just like they did in the old days, gave him the fourth step format. And that was the last I saw of him. Okay. Every step confirms the previous step. If you really have come to believe that there's power here that you need for your, to solve your compulsive overeating problem, and you say you've taken the third step, okay, when your sponsor gives you that inventory format, if you don't start writing, and the book says we launched into a house clean, launch means, you know, like a Navy jet on a steam catapult. He's gone from like 0 to 300 miles an hour in about 3 seconds. If you don't start writing, you ain't made the third step decision. Okay, you don't have to be sure what God is. You can say, well, whatever God's keeping Roy abstinent all those years, that's good enough for me. We get the evidence of the awakened spirits with recovery. If you make that decision, it can be as simple as, I'm doing the OA deal. I'm going to get a food. And by the way, the literature talks about that, the OA 12 and 12. I thought it was very well written. It says, if you make a decision, I'm going to get a food sponsor, get on a food plan, go to meetings, listen to the speakers, and work the rest of the steps, you've made a third step decision. You might not have a very clear idea of what the power is, but it's just the decision to seek the power. Now, Bill is promised by Ebby. Oh, I should read that from his story, okay? Here's what Bill decided to do. I humbly offer myself to God as I then understood him. And you might just understand him as there's power in OA that's helping nut jobs like Roy pass from normal for 42 years. That's good enough. You can borrow my, whatever powers restoring me to sanity, you're welcome to borrow it. Okay. And I then understood him to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and protection. We're going to get care and protection. It doesn't mean we're not going to get sick, have financial reverses, have romantic reverses, have the secretaries of meeting pissing us off, have sponsees pissing us off. It just means I'm not going to have to overeat over this shit. That's what it means. Doesn't, you know, life's a bitch and then you die. Bill talks about certain trials and low points ahead. What does the word certain mean to you? It means certain trials and low points ahead. Miracles happen, shit happens, is my personal contribution of slogans. I admitted for the first time on myself, I was nothing. Now, without him, I was lost. Do you need power? You think you're going to, the mind that I brought in here that said, you know, a half a gallon of mint chip ice cream is a cure for financial insecurity. I ain't fixing myself with that mind. I need some power. Okay. I ruthlessly face my sins. That's a sixth and seventh step or fourth and fifth step and six and seven. And became willing to have my newfound friend capitalized, meaning a higher power, take them away root and branch. I have not had a compulsive bite since. All right. So then Ebby gives him the rest of the program. And he says, my friend promised, I don't want to go through the whole, how much time I got left, by the way, till an hour. 10 minutes? Okay, let me read the rest of it. basically, Bill made a decision based on what he saw in Ebby with 2 months of sobriety. He was in a miracle back in 1934, November, that he's going to do the deal. Okay, are you ready, newcomers in this meeting, to make a decision you're going to do the deal? Maybe you haven't been convinced yet there's power here that can help you. Okay, keep going to meetings. Keep listening. Okay? My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. So he was willing to do a fourth and fifth. We made a list of people I'd heard or toward whom I felt resentment. Okay, he's doing an eight, and he's going to approach them. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals. That's a nine, admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. The Oxford group used to call this restitution. I'm just going to go out and repair damage to anybody I've harmed or against whom I felt resentment. Why is it so important to lose the resentment? Because the book says at step three, this is the how and the why that I got to quit playing God. And when I have a resentment, it says, I'm the victim, he's the perp, he's guilty, I'm innocent. I want the power to punish him. I'm playing God. And it says, I got to quit playing God. It doesn't work. And I have to be convinced that it doesn't work, both in my food and also page 52, my emotional issues. If I'm not convinced that Roy running on Roy power is going to fix this thing, I'm not ready for the steps yet. You know, I'm not even ready for this stuff. But Bill was ready, right? Alcohol was his master. In our case, food is my master. So never was I, all right. So I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. That's 10th step, 11th step. Common sense would then become uncommon sense. I'm going to go by intuition now, not my finite mind. I made a decision that I'm going to trust infinite God rather than my finite self. And believe me, when you've been around as long as me and made as many mistakes as I have, stone cold abstinent, I know I can't manage my life so well. Sometimes it's don't just do something, stand there. Just sit, meditate, pray until the next right indicated action becomes obvious to me. And if I'm not sure, do nothing. Okay. He says, I'm going to ask only for strength and direction to meet my problems as he would have me. Okay. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. So what we get here, when we take that third step decision to go through the steps and do the inventories and make the amends, is we get power to help others. Not the, you know, cash and prizes. There's nothing in those ninth and 10th step promises that have anything to do with third dimensional shit. It's all fourth dimensional spiritual promises. I'm in a safe, neutral ground, and I'm not fighting anything or anybody, even food. Okay? Those are the promises. Then only might I respect to receive, but that would be in great measure. Now, here's the final promise that what's all about the third step is, do I want to seek a relationship with this higher power? My friend promised within when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my creator. And here's the kicker, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. He didn't even mention drinking or food, right? All my problems. All right, now, newcomers, are you interested in a relationship with a power that's going to answer all your problems? And if you're not, you ain't ready, okay, for this process. You can hang around away and do what the hell you want. I don't care. But, you know, I base my public relations policy on repulsion rather than attraction. I come in OA meetings and I tell them the truth. I told them, you don't know how to do speaker meetings. So I started to light a candle. I tell them, you don't know how to do book studies. And it's true of half of AA too. So I don't think I'm picking on this. And that's why I send people to the Melbourne meeting. At least they spend the first 25 minutes reading the goddamn book and talking about the book, not talking about the book and then going off on some tangent. So that's the decision I have to make. Do I want this power in my life? And it really can be as simple as I'm going to do the rest of the steps and see what happens. It can be that simple. You don't have to have a... One thing I wanted to mention is I was in a detox. And believe me, I'm a real alcoholic. I was put in the hospital by AA. People thought I was going to have a convulsion in AA meeting. Okay? I was in a detox 43 years ago with a Catholic priest and an Episcopal priest who are alcoholics. The book says it's impossible for anyone to fully define or comprehend that which is God. Now, these guys can define or comprehend that which is God, and they can tell you the right church to go to and the right actions to take. Well, what the hell are you doing here, Father? Sitting there in a bathrobe with me, you know, with Dr. Morgan telling you when you get out of here, you better go to AA meetings. You know, it's not about comprehensions and definitions. That's not my problem as a real compulsive overeater. My problem is not lack of comprehensions and definitions of God. My problem is lack of power. And the third step decision is I'm going to go for this power. If I've come to believe, if I'm out of my own human resources, like Bill was, alcohol was my master. Food is your master, and you know you ain't thinking your way out of this shit. And you've come to believe there's some power here in OA. And that includes picking up the tools, getting the food sponsor, the food plan, commitments. And you decided this power could possibly help you. Then that third step is a decision. See, my problem is lack of power. I need to build a relationship with a power that will answer all my problems. Okay. And my experience with this process is I found it here. And I'm just another awakened. That's all I am, as a messenger boy. That's all Ebby was. Okay. By the way, Ebby had a lot of troubles staying sober. And it's not trying to pick on poor Ebby. Many of us plug into the power like Ebby did, and then unplug from the power. And gee, what a surprise. We gained 60 pounds. You know how often I've seen this shit now? In over 40?
It's 50 minutes, just so you know.
Okay, I'll conclude. I've been around this thing. I see what goes on here. And I piss off a lot of people in OA, frankly, because I kind of don't water down the message. And I say shit that drives them nuts, like 9 out of 10 OA meetings I go to, the person who has what I want is me. And I'm not trying to be egotistical because I didn't do it. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. But there was a price I had to pay. And that's what's also in Bill's story. I didn't get to read it. And that's I had to turn in all things. Now, he uses the Father of Light. I know that's Judeo-Christian. That's off-putting to many people. But I have to turn in all things to this power. In other words, when I got a problem that's kicking my butt, page 52, I go through the steps again. So I'm just a messenger that because I have been willing to submit to this process, and that's the way I like to put it. I submit to this process as outlined in the book. I've been in a state of grace now for over 42 years. Thank you, God. I take no credit for it. Here's my truth. If you got a different truth, go with it. Do what the hell turns you on. Float your boat. My truth is if I want what's on 83, 84, and 85, what we commonly call the 9th and 10th step promises, I got to be willing to do what's on 1 through 82. Now, if you can put those promises in your life with some other method, my hat's off. Where's my hat? That's why I wear this beret. People say, why do you wear that silly beret? So I can go, my hat's off to you. You know, if you can put those promises in your life winging it, good luck. But I know what I know and I see what I see. I'm just a messenger boy, man. I'm just another bozo on the block. But I don't water down the message. And I take my guys line by line through the book. We just do what the hell the book says. And then wish them good luck. And it's worked for me for over 42 years. And I know I'm not special. So here's my promise to you right out of chapter 4. If you keep this attitude that the book says is indispensable, willingness, honesty, open-mindedness, and humility. Humility can mean, are you willing to try it our way, not your way, okay? Willingness, honesty, open-mindedness, humility. With this attitude, you cannot fail, okay? So I hope that gives you a little encouragement. I hope I didn't scare the shit out of you. And with that, I'll conclude. And if you want to ask questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Thank you so much, Roy, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us today. We are now transitioning into a question and answer segment. And I'd like to introduce Tammy, who is our moderator for today. If you have a question, you can actually pop those into the chat. And Tammy will actually ask those. And to Roy, Tammy, please unmute.
Hey, everybody. My name is Tammy, and I'm a compulsive overeater and your moderator for today. Please do send me your questions still in the chat while we go through it. We're going to answer as many questions as we can. So, Roy, the first question that I have for you today is, do you consider that we take the third step once, or is it a daily decision?
You know, that's a great question. I would say that when I originally took my third step, and this, the book says that if you express it sincerely, the wording's optional. Now, today I tend to, if I'm working with a newcomer, recite the third step on my knees, following the book. But the book says, I give them the option. If you want to make up your own third step prayer, by all means do so. My original third step prayer was, God, as I think it was about a year on the program, fairly newly abstinent back from France. My father just died, a lot of financial insecurity, which is all in my head. I said, God, I don't know if there's anyone on the other end of this call or not, but I think this program is my best chance for happiness. And I expressed it sincerely, and I followed it up with the inventory and stuff. So I'm still here. So over the years, I think I have taken my will back, and the 12 and 12 and AA anyway talks about this, and I think it's true in OA. I'm going to turn my eating problem over to OA, but I'm going to decide how I treat the clerk, whether I obey the traffic laws, whether I pay my income taxes, if I give an honest day's work to a boss. And then I find out I've recreated page 52 again. And thank God it just pushes me back into a surrender where I go through the step process again. So I think my step three has improved over the years as I try and take back control and self-reliance, and it fails me again. And it's almost like I got to hit the bottom of the food, and I have to hit the bottom with self-will, and I have to hit the bottom with every character defect. And so I don't know how to definitively answer that for you, but for me, I can say I've never gone back on that decision that the answers were here. Okay, so that in that sense, my third step's intact. But I can kind of hedge my statement by saying, over the years in various aspects of my life, I grabbed some self-will back and created, and I manufactured my own misery. It's one of the greatest statements in the book, avoid then the manufacture of your own misery. It's easy to quote, but it's a lot harder for a guy like me to do, because self-will is my default. That's the essence of my problem, is self-will run riot. So what does it say? The compulsive overeater is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So I would say that my basic decision that the answers was here stayed intact, but over the years, I've tried to manage areas of my life and very unsuccessfully. So I'm more surrendered today than I ever have been. And I think that's appropriate, because if the disease is progressive, my recovery better be progressive. And that's why I tend to go through the steps again. If you guys can do steps once and live in 10, 11, and 12, where's my hat? Okay. My hat's off to you. You know, I'm one of those guys that in the space of a year usually manufactures a little wreckage. So I find myself going through the steps again on a regular basis. So I don't think I have a definitive answer for you. I'm just telling you what happened with me regarding that step. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you. The next question we have is, what is the gray sheet?
Oh, I'm glad that's a question. It means it's not prominent anymore. If you read the history of OA by Roseanne, it's called Beyond Our Wildest Dreams, it's conference-approved literature. Even before there was gray sheet, there was gold sheet and green. There were just food plans. I mean, Roseanne is the founder of our fellowship. She ran into somebody who her husband knew in Gamblers Anonymous and asked him, do you think this 12-step stuff could work on the food problem? And he said, yeah, sure it could. And he hooked her up with some AA people. And Roseanne started the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. She's not the founder of the program. The program's in the big book. Sorry, that's my opinion. You don't like it, you can eat at me. But that's the program's in the big book. Roseanne started our fellowship. And one of the things they did before they were committed to the book, because Roseanne, she tried to rewrite this. I mean, she used to laugh about it later. By the way, one of the last times I saw her was at a big book workshop in the hood by this black guy named Samuel. And it was full of OA members. He was very popular with OA. And so Roseanne got the message that the program's in the big book. She's not stupid. But originally there was a bunch of food plans that they used to mimeograph. And one of the mimeograph food plans, which came off on gray paper or something, was called Gray Sheet. And it's all in that history of OA. So nowadays we have Dignity of Choice, which has a bunch of suggested food plans. But this food thing is more complex on a physical level. Alcohol food plan is very simple, no alcohol. And if your sponsor is really creative, you might say no alcohol, no self-prescribed mind-altering drugs. You know, stay off the weed, stay off the, you know, the Valium too. But in OA, we got to work out a food plan, you know. And so a food sponsor and a food plan is suggested. That's part of a third step decision. If you decide, I'm going to read that tools pamphlet and I'm going to do what they say, that's part of a third step decision, because you're already trying to do it somebody else's way. Even if it's only the group or the food sponsor or whatever, you're making a start on a third step decision, trying it somebody else's way. And usually the only thing that gets me to that point is my way has to stop working. I had a friend who used to say, step zero is this shit's got to stop. And when I find out I can't stop it on my own power, then all of a sudden step two and three start looking good. You know, one, two, and three start looking good. Okay, so yeah, that's the answer. Gray Sheet was just one of the early mimeograph food plans, and it wasn't the only one too. All right.
Why is the word lives in the third step plural? As in turn our will singular and our lives plural over to the care of God as we understood him.
Well, our will is, I guess I want to turn our wills over. Nah, I just think it's grammar. Our is still the plural personal adjective, you know. Our lives, you know, lives is usually, we don't usually say our wills. We say my family's will is. So some collective nouns have an S and some don't. It's just grammar. I was a PhD lit major, by the way. I drank myself out of that program. Anyway.
All right.
I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. The book is written in the collective we. We is the first word in the forward to the first edition. It's definitely a we program. Listen to 1951 Dallas talk when Ebby gives him the message. And Bill says, what kind of religion is this? And he says, well, not much of a religion, really more like common sense. We read that today. Common sense becomes uncommon sense for us. Not much of a religion, more like common sense. You got to get honest with yourself about your drinking, whatever's bothering you. He might have used the word sins because that's Oxford group talk. And the second thing he says to Bill is, you got to quit this living alone. Remember Bill's story? He became a lone wolf. You got to quit this living alone. Dr. Jung said the same thing in a letter to Bill. You can't fight evil in the world on yourself. You have to join the spiritual movement. You know, we have a fellowship here. Okay, join OA. Get a home group, get a food sponsor, get commitments. So it's the plural is very important. This is a we program. It was never meant to be done alone, never will be meant to be done alone. Okay, I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. And we have a lot of questions about your morning meditation and what your morning meditation looks like. And it's a lot about how do you do this in the morning? Also, when you go into the morning, but what happens if you forget that morning meditation throughout the day? Like if you forgot your connection to higher power. So it's like a three part question. First, what's your morning meditation look like? Do you continue it through the day? And what do you do if you're going through the day and you lose that connection?
Well, okay. First of all, great question. And remember, there's numbers in front of those steps. So hopefully if I'm on step 11, part of it is the morning meditation on awakening. Okay. That presumes I've done the previous, you know, 4 through 9, cleared out the channels, and I've entered the world of the spirit in step 10. So then I want to continue to improve my conscious, this relation with this power that will answer all my problems, okay? And certainly dispel the obsession to overeat, okay? So I do, it took me years to do it, but I finally, and I had meditation tapes, I took TM training, this, that, and the other thing. But it's basically at this point in my recovery, I'm reverting back to Bill, you know. I was to sit quietly in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he was having me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request born my usefulness to others. So in the morning, I read the OA for today. I read Emmett Fox's Around the World with Emmett Fox. It's a daily reader. I used to read the 24-hour book. I used to read Bill Season. I used to read 2 pages of the Big Book. Just go through the Big Book over and over and over again for years. Nowadays, I read sections of the Big Book, like the third step. You know, you're my director. I'm your actor. You're my principal. I'm your agent. You're my father. I'm your son. You're my employer. I'm your worker. You know, most good ideas are simple. I say the third step prayer, the 7-step prayer. If I got bad feelings towards people, I pray for them and ask God to help me see them as sick people, you know, save me from anger, argument, and retaliation. If I have to do something like speak in an OA meeting, I ask for inspiration. And today, because I knew I was going to speak in on step 3, I read the OA 12 and 12. I read the AA 12 and 12. I read the book. I listened to a couple tapes on step 3. And I asked for God to help me give a nice message to this OA meeting. I can ask for power as long as it's power to help others. The book's clear. It says we're careful not to pray for selfish things. I can't pray to hit the lotto. However, because I'm such on the cutting edge of the spirituality, I told my friend, Johnny Kay, I said, look, you got this band. I'm going to pray that you get a lot of gigs for your band. I want you to pray that I hit the lotto. This is called cross praying because I'm on the cutting edge of the spirituality shit. But of course, I'm being facetious. But we're careful not to pray for selfish things, but we can pray for the power to help others. I don't want to take up more time. I can give you an AA history lesson that's how this whole program started, because Dr. Bob confessed his alcohol addiction to the Oxford group. And part of their practice was if you confess, by the way, that made it into the book, confess your faults to your fellows and join us on the broad highway. Once he confessed that I'm a secret drinker, meanwhile, the whole town knew he was a drunk, but including the other members, but he had to confess it. And then they prayed for help. And then 2 weeks later, when Bill Wilson calls him and says, I'm a rum hound from New York and an Oxford group, and I need to talk to another alcoholic to stay sober, Henrietta Seibring says, come on over. I got the man for you. I get power to help others, not power for selfish things. But if you got a problem, or you can ask for direction and guidance in how to handle it. Okay. So my morning routine is read the spiritual literature, say some prayers. And then I do it on my knees just because I feel surrendered. It's just me. You don't have to do it that way. Then I try and sit today for about 5 minutes before the meeting. I just said, God, I'm going to speak at this meeting. If there's anything I need, you know, I'm a messenger boy. Maybe you can inspire me to say something, you know. And that's, you know, I keep it simple. I doubt if I pray and I meditate for it. I used to do TM every day, twice a day for at least 20 minutes. I do 5 minutes in the quiet time in the morning. That's what they did in the Oxford group. Some people did, directive writing. If you got a problem, especially a problem that somebody else has, maybe you're looking to help them, they'd sit there with a legal pad and say, God, give me some direction. They sit there and do automatic writing and stuff. I don't do that, but if I'm going to speak at a meeting, I say, God, give me some inspiration. Maybe I can say something to help these people. It says that if my house is in order, I'm going to be given a lot of power to help others. And it's power that no nutritionist, psychiatrist, your family doesn't have that power. But one compulsive overeater talking to another that can gain their confidence can help you. Just like Bill Wilson, this guy with two months of sobriety had the power to change Bill Wilson's life. That power you get here. Okay, I hope that answers your question.
We have about 3 minutes left to go ahead. The next question is, how do you discern your voice from God's voice? When you're in this prayer, when you're in this meditation, how do you discern what is the voice of God, the guidance of God from your own thoughts?
Great question. And the book does counsel us that sometimes we're going to make mistakes, especially early on. I have made mistakes. I think it's not like a clear voice sometimes. Sometimes I don't think I've ever got, every once in a while I get the great screaming no, you know, which is don't do this. And it's usually an inner voice in the gut, you know, it's in the heart, it's in the intuition. It's the mind is where the disease is located. The disease centers in the mind. The mind says, I got this thing. I can figure this out. I'm going to do this. But if I've cleared the channels, I get it through the intuition. Now, in the 12 and 12, Bill later counsels us that people of mature spiritual development always have spiritual counselors and advisors. I do believe in sponsorship. I still have a food sponsor. I have what I guess you call a regular sponsor. I check in with once a week. So she's a woman. She's Stanford graduate. She's very intelligent. She's a total big book. She's 54 years sober and she's 91 years old. And she's been an active member of AA. And I check in with her. Then I have spiritual advisors, step guides. I go through the steps again. I might go through with a workshop leader. I also have a guy in the Philippines. He's my spiritual advisor. I'm going to do an inventory with him this year. So it's okay to run your inspiration through your sponsor. But if you got a strong intuitive gut feeling, you know, I've had two sponsors say, you don't know that guy in a mess. But you know, my gut said, you should do something. I will honor the intuition. But the book does say when you're new, you might get a little, you know, you might be a little bit delusional. Remember the word practice? They're not kidding when they say practice. When you practice karate or knitting or the piano, you usually get better at it. And just take that word literally. You practice these steps over and over again on a daily basis, staying plugged in all three sides of the triangle. And you're going to get better at it. And you might make some mistakes when you're new. The book even talks about it. You practice these things, spiritual principles. You practice them over and over again. So I hope that answered your question.
Thank you. We are out of time, but I'm going to squeeze in one more question real quick because I think it's really important. You spoke specifically about the 12 and 12 and the basic text of the big book. How often, this was a newcomer question, how often should someone refer to the 12 and 12 and other materials versus the big book?
How often should they refer to them? Well, as often as you want. I mean, the point is this, I'm going to read you something from the 12 and 12 now, not the big book, the 12 and 12. The book Alcoholics Anonymous, this is from page 17, the forward of the 12 and 12. The book Alcoholics Anonymous became the basic text of the fellowship, and it still is. This was written in 53. Bill was still alive, but it's, you know, what, 20 years after the big book? This present volume, meaning is proposed to broaden and deepen the understanding of the 12 steps as first written in the earlier work. In other words, it's not meant to replace the big book. if you go through the steps as outlined in the book, my personal experience is the 12 and 12 became alive for me. You know, I love the 12 and 12. In chapter 3 today, I read it because we're talking about step 3. One of my all-time favorite lines. We're here by circumstance, not virtue. You know, it's the food that kicks my ass in here. I don't come in here because I want to become a better spiritual person. That's in the 12 and 12. If you work the steps as outlined in the book, you'll know when to refer to the 12 and 12. And you'll know how brilliant it is. But it's the problem with the 12 and 12, and it started with my first AA sponsor, in my opinion, probably one of the real alcoholic. The 12 and 12 gives people the ability to talk about the steps without having actually done what the book says, which is finish your goddamn amends, pay back the money, stop any sexual behavior that's harming others, you know, pray and meditate on a daily basis, turn to God for guidance in all things. Okay. There is no human power. I mean, the book is pretty powerful and it's pretty scary. And if you're going to just use OA as my friend Dan Sherman, he's passed on at a great meeting in the sky. He wrote the Big Book Awakening, which is a big book step guide. It's pretty good, you know. But Dan used to say, half of AA today is like unsupervised group therapy. We call them dead cat meetings. The Big Book is clear. I do certain things to put myself in contact with God. And no human power is going to solve my problems. Certainly not me, because I'm just the human power. And the 12 and 12, it doesn't give you an inventory format from step 4. It gives you some interesting questions. You can use it. I have nothing against people who love the 12 and 12. I love the 12 and 12, but it was never meant to replace the Big Book. Sandy Beach said it best, so I'm just going to quote him and then conclude. He said, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the basic how to do it step guide. And the 12 and 12 is a brilliant series of essays on the psychology of the alcoholic and the spiritual dynamics of the step process. And I can't put it any more eloquently than that. So I'll just quote him. He was a Yale graduate. So total respect for Sandy B, my favorite AA speaker of all time. And that's the way it is, man. Do the steps as outlined in the book and you'll love the 12 and 12 and you'll know when to quote it. But if you're going to quote the 12 and 12 without having finished all your amends and without having abandoned yourself utterly to a higher power, which is what the book says I'm supposed to do, good luck. Because I've been through this shit years ago with my first sponsor. He used to say, I'm 12 and a half years sober. I know more than Bill when he wrote the book. He only had 4.5 years. The 12 and 12 is a better book. That's what he used to say. Well, I'm 40, coming up on 43 years. It's been 43 years since my last drink. But if I, 2 days from now, I'll pick up a medallion for 43 years of sobriety. I'm over 42 years absent in this program. And I'm here to tell you, if it ain't the Big Book, it's just somebody's opinion. And I'm not telling any newcomer what to do. If you want to bet your life on somebody's opinion, be my guest. I already did it. My first sponsor, I thought he knew something. As far as I'm concerned, I'm just a messenger that the program's in the book. You're either going to do it or you're not. I was either willing to do it or not. Thank you, God. I was willing to do it and I've been restored. Thank you. I'm absent today by the grace of God, and any success I have in my life is more his than mine. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm telling you that the Big Book's the basic way to do the program. And I'm around here 42 plus years and I haven't seen anybody improve on it. And I've seen a lot of people try and they get what they get. So good luck. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you so much, Roy. We are a little bit over time now, so I'm going to go ahead and hand it back to Dee.
Thank you, Tammy. And thank you very, very much, Roy. I'm awake today and I put that down to a lot of the words of wisdom that you constantly pass to me and you have today. So thank you. This is a reminder that a Design for Living Big Book OA is a daily meeting. We are based out of Melbourne, Australia, at 6:30 a.m. Melbourne time, Monday to Friday, and 7:30 Saturday and Sunday in Australia. Our next monthly STEP speaker meeting will be held on the 11th of April, if you'd like to note that down. We hope to see you there. In closing, I would like to thank you all for your service and coming here today. By following the 12 steps, attending meetings, and using the OA tools, we are changing our lives. You will find hope and encouragement in Overeaters Anonymous. To the newcomer, we suggest attending at least 6 different meetings to learn the many ways OA can help you. Let us all reach out by phone, email to newcomers, returning members, and each other. Together, we get better. To close the meeting, will Kate please unmute and Francesca, please unmute and read the promises which we posted in the chat section for people to follow along.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know new freedom and new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.